Besides labor. I think that we could probably just do the Pledge of Allegiance on the silence of the record.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So we need to follow up on it first.
Yes.
Yes.
Is there any formal public comment, Bruce?
Yes, ma'am. We have one from Branch Ross.
Good evening, Mr. Olson. Fran. Mr. Olson? No?
Fran, you need to connect your audio.
Scott, you can hear us, correct?
Correct.
All right, are you able to hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good evening. So I did want to, we wanted to let you know, we couldn't hear anything on our end, some of the other people that I was chatting with too, so I know my end's fixed on this part now. So I did want to discuss the class waiver, and I do have just a written presentation, so apologize if I'm looking down at my paper. So typically, we always have a little debated issue regarding class size. And currently, Delaware does recognize the benefit of smaller class sizes, with K-3 classes being capped at 22 students. Still, there's many oversized classrooms. Still, there's so many oversized classrooms with children who risk falling behind. Here's a look at some of the negative effects associated with large class sizes. So obviously there's less time for individualized attention. There's disrupted learning environment. We have less participation in a larger classroom. You know, students aren't able to participate in the group discussions as they would in a smaller classroom. Teacher recognition. In a large classroom, it's more difficult for a teacher to stay on top of the strengths and weaknesses of their students. So some of the key takeaways on that are the larger classroom results in a less individualized attention from the teacher. Larger classrooms lend themselves to a more disruptive environment because there are more students to manage. Larger classrooms mean less participation by students in group discussions. Teachers aren't able to identify the strengths and weaknesses of their students in a large classroom the way they would in a smaller one. Class size is an important determinant of student outcomes and one that can be directly determined by policy. Any attempts to increase class sizes will harm student outcomes. The evidence suggests that increasing class size will not only harm children's academics results in the short run, but also long-term success at school and beyond. The money saved by not decreasing class sizes may result in substantial social and education costs in the future. The impact of class size reduction is greater for low-income and minority children. While lower class size has demonstrable costs, it may prove the more cost-effective policy overall, closing the widening gaps between the lowest and highest achievers. Professional development for staff involved will increase their knowledge of and preparedness to use techniques that are particularly suited to small class. The benefits of a small class size are more one-on-one time. There is more that students can't hide. It's easier to identify issues. In the large classes, teachers struggle to identify where problems might be arising. And then because their time is so valuable, they further struggle to adequately address those issues. There is a more cohesive class culture. A smaller class will ultimately make it more cohesive than a larger one. The teachers can form better relationships. And I know that's a big thing in our district, how we want to form those relationships with the students. Related to the increased amount of individual time that's spent is the quality of the relationships teachers are able to build with each student. In smaller classes, teachers better know the strengths, the weaknesses, the needs of their students. And with this increased level of attention, teachers can more successfully relate and instruct, thus becoming more than a simple instructor, but a genuine role model. Students are more engaged, right? They can go faster, simply put, in a smaller group. Teacher attention is more focused, therefore students are more inclined to engage and be enthusiastic towards the material. And when this happens, work gets done faster. When the work is done faster, classes can cover more ground, they can explore more topics, and they can more completely experience the curriculum and ideas that are presented. And when all the work is done, now everyone has time for a more fun in class, thus improving the class culture and cohesion. It's much less chaotic. In a smaller class, there will simply be less noise, less distractions, right? It's beneficial for the district. The above reasons are a list of pedagogical benefits that smaller classes arise. But in aggregate, they make for better, more productive, and easier to manage environments for the teachers. When teachers are given the space to be productive in a positive and peaceful class, they are simply happier and better at their jobs. The grind becomes less of one, teachers last longer in the field, and there's ultimately a net benefit for the field of education when teachers are happier. The research shows benefits are to small classes. So don't just take my word for it. The vast majority of research shows that students perform better in all subjects at all levels in smaller classes. Furthermore, the research points to other benefits of smaller class sizes besides those listed, including long-term professional performance benefits and greater teacher retention. With so much evidence in favor of small classes, don't we owe it to our students and teachers to make sure education occurs in the more constructive environment that the smaller classes allow for? For better academic results, happier teachers, and ultimately a more educated society, promoting smaller classes should be a priority for teachers, parents, districts, and government officials. For those reasons that I've mentioned above, I'm requesting that you do not pass this waiver and instead be a district that lives up to its five core values of compassion, integrity, perseverance, respect, and responsibility. It's your responsibility to provide our students with the best education possible. Passing this waiver and permitting large class sizes at our elementary levels certainly is not the way to do that. All right, so thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, so I will discuss the class size waiver. So first I wanted to mention that there are actually two waivers that districts can apply for yearly. One is to waive their requirement to staff schools at 98% of the units earned. In my tenure, and this is the fifth time that I've come to you as the assistant superintendent, we've never, ever asked for that. We have staffed above and beyond the 98% of units earned in each of the schools. We're at least 0.2 of a unit over, and we are considerably over in many of the schools. So the above 98% calculations are 0.2, 0.3, 3.2, 3.3, 3.85, 5.6, and 7.3. So some of our schools are significantly staffed beyond the 98%. Now, why do those numbers vary widely? Because we staff for who we think is coming in August and September, and then there are shifts. But the problem with the shifts are those students are in class with their people, with the supports, And we know that kids need consistency. So we are not the district that just moves teachers from school to school at will. We certainly want to think about the kids that are involved because that is the most part of the puzzle. So we are asking for the class size waiver today. On October 30th, we were required to take a snapshot of the number of students in K-3 classes, and we have 12 classes out of 79 classes that are requiring the waiver. So what can we do to get those 12 classes under the 22? We could move a fourth grade teacher to a K-3 class and distribute the fourth grade students amongst the other classes because there is no waiver in fourth grade. Separate TAM teachers into two different classrooms. The teacher certified at special ed will most likely take all the special education students unless both are duly certified. The idea of a TAM classroom is to provide that additional adult support to the students who require it the most. So we do not tend to do that. We tend to make those classes slightly larger, but not to the point where we are giving them 44 students, which is what they can hold according to the state of Delaware and what is in code. We could voluntarily or involuntarily transfer teachers from the overstaffed elementary school to others. But again, that would cause a ripple effect of issues for those students who are well into or just finishing the first marking period this week with that teacher and with those peers. So what will just happen if the waiver passes? Nothing. Nothing's going to happen. We're not adding kids. This is where we are. We have requested, I have requested that every principal in our K-3 schools be sure that any classroom with a number of students over the limit of 22 has additional adult support, thus making them not classes who require the waiver. We have a few, specifically Sunnyside has the most classes, and they're just 2 to 3 above the waiver. And having been the principal at Sunnyside, I can tell you that that is pretty much how it always is. Those 2 to 3 and 5 classes don't add up to a teacher. So unfortunately, and I really appreciate them for doing that, for always being amenable to having that work. So because none of the options we think above satisfy our philosophy of putting the kids first, we would like to ask that you putting the kids first and thinking of our staff, because again, that would require transfers and such, and we know that that is not how we want to treat our staff. We propose and request you pass the class size waiver for the 2021-2022 school.
And I would like to echo what Mrs. Judy said and also point out that at Smyrna Elementary in particular, Mrs. McNatt is here. She and her team, working with the staff, the teachers, and special services, have made a commitment to small class sizes, Mrs. Strasser requests, in the inclusion classroom. And in the inclusion classrooms, even though there are two educators, two certified teachers, the K-3 waiver would say 22 for one and 22 for the other, for a total of 44. So realistically, Mrs. McNatt could put 44 students in those inclusion classes and all of the others would be well under 22. And that would be compliant with the K-3 class size. I offer that example to reinforce what Mrs. Judy said, but to also to illustrate that there is this dramatic misconception about the class size waiver. Putting 44 students in an inclusion classroom flies against reason, flies against everything that Mrs. Strasser pointed out, and we agree with her. Smaller class size, including inclusion classes, is a primary concern for not only Mrs. McNatt, but all of the elementary school principals. But to be able to offer inclusion classrooms, what's best for kids, what's helpful for teachers, means that some of the other classrooms have to exceed 22 students to be able to hold the line on inclusion. But as Mrs. McNatt has planned, many of those classes, as Mrs. Judy pointed out, have at least two adults in there working with those students. And that also has to be pointed out. There's a commitment to keeping appropriate supervision. Last, I would just like to compliment Mrs. McNatt. I recently saw in one of the lunch periods, There were about 50 students, and she has 10 to 12 staff members supervising lunch. So she has a wealth of staffs that she can deploy to make sure that students are safe. And I was frankly amazed when I saw 50 students eating lunch and 12 staff members supervising. I know, having been a high school associate principal and a middle school principal, I would be shouting hooray every single day if I could have a ratio of 12 teachers to 50 students, right? I see the high school associates shaking. So a big shout out to Mrs. McNatt for doing everything she can to make sure students are safe and comfortably eating and following COVID guidelines and putting a surplus of staff to supervise those children when they are in the cafeteria. She's done a fantastic job.
If I could just add one more caveat to the uniqueness of this year, and that would be that we do have a virtual academy that has stressed the staff of some of the elementary schools, because we have, say, 7 to 8 kindergartners. We have a unit teaching 7 to 8 kindergartners. We have 11 to 12 first graders. We have a unit teaching those students. We as a district committed to the virtual academy for this school year because we cannot put more students in that classroom, because certainly that is the choice of the families. But we also can't just at will add teaching units to schools based on that. We've done the very best we can, and the principals have worked with us to do that. So I thank them very much.
I also know that there's been in previous years much higher numbers than we're faced with this year as well. So I do appreciate the effort of looking at the numbers and adjusting students even before school began, and then placing them in the appropriate classes. Because I know that we've had a lot of higher numbers in the past.
And just to put things in perspective, we have never submitted by principals for the 10-3 classrooms. It seems that 85% of the classes that have 22 or less,
yep.
So those 15% that have more than 22, half of them, 6 classrooms has 1 extra, and half of them have 2 extra. Mm-hmm. So there's a perception going around that the classrooms are bursting at the seams and running amok, but it's really 1 or 2 students in 15% of the classes. Yeah. Yeah. So I too like to commend the staff on making the numbers work.
Our math adds up because I have 50%
as well. So. I think another thing that's important to note is keeping the kids in their same classrooms after the year and a half that our kids have been through. I can't imagine 9 weeks into the year telling a first grader that they have to move to a teacher who they don't know and be with other children that they don't know. It's never ideal to be over 22. If it was up to me, it would be closer to 18.
Sure.
But unfortunately, that's not in our hands. And we can only do the best we can do. And I, as with everybody else, commend the principals for keeping those children in the best situation for them.
One concern that I do have is when you say it's allowed to be over 22, and you don't give a top range, I can understand concerns for the parents wondering, because now you feel like you have free reign to go as high as you want.
Exactly.
So, right. So even though we've been committed to keeping the numbers low, I'd like to hear publicly that we still maintain that mindset. And not grow it, because now we have a license to do that.
And I work with my principals and Chris with the units all summer long. And like I said, some of the schools end up, and last year it was Turner Elementary, it was overstaffed. But we look at these numbers and the trends, and we think we have these intensive students, complex students going to a school, so we must staff at that level, and let's make sure that we have all the staff, and then kids move out. And right. So it's not, we do the best we can. But again, once something is set, we do not want to disrupt the kids, and especially this year, because we've had behavioral challenges. We've had, kids who are not used to being in this setting. Teachers are struggling. We're all struggling. And so shifting and changing, I mean, I'm going to change, but not everybody is. So that's something that we have to consider.
Well, Mrs. Judy, adding in the virtual academy this year is an independent variable, and trying to hold the families and estimate the numbers and then posting for the positions and allocating the resources. I mean, there was a whole lot, there were many other issues wrapped up in that that impact staffing and the K-3 class size. And to see these numbers, to me, is frankly amazing that we've been able to pull off the virtual academy and also create these kinds of classes and make sure that, as you've highlighted, we have, you know, student teachers, paraprofessionals, we have other adults in the classroom with those teachers providing supplemental resources.
I mean, that's fantastic. Amazed at this, the number of staff we were able to secure.
Yep.
Because it has been a challenge, and it's been a challenge across the state and nation. So I want to also thank Mrs. Holt and Mrs. Marvel from curriculum for working with the Virtual Academy and just trying to make that promise be fulfilled to those families that we made last spring.
I will say the Virtual Academy, I've heard positive, like, just improvements from last year to this year. So I have heard positive.
Good. And we've had some kids come back, and, you know, our goal is to get them all back. So when that comes through my email, I go, yes. I mean, we certainly want them to make that year-long commitment, but if we can get a kid in a seat and we can have eyes on them, that's what we want. So we do make those considerations.
Madam President, I make a motion to approve the class size waiver as submitted by the administration.
Second.
I have a motion by Ms. Malik, second by Ms. Lloyd, to approve the class size waiver as submitted by administration. Are there any questions or comments? Any questions or comments?
Reverend will sign in the back, please come on.
I'm good. It's just my video, but I think I have, so we're good. If you want to go ahead with the vote.
Oh, you didn't have a question?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Nay. Nay.
Okay, so the motion carries 4-1. That's approved for the class waiver size. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, 6:13, we entertain a motion to adjourn the special meeting for a class size waiver.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Meeting adjourned. Do we want to go right into the working session? Hey, Ms. Cook. We'll let her go first.
Mm-hmm. I will say, first of all, thank you for the time. And I did my very best to make this as short as I could. But it's hard when I only have 1 year stuff to talk to you about with everything we have going on. And I feel like I'm trying to get 2.5 into one presentation. So I'll make it as quick as I can. I have some highlights to share with you first, and then Bruce is going to help me with the PowerPoint, but I won't need that quite yet. That's towards the end, so I'll let you know, okay? First of all, if you haven't heard, we're making history at Smyrna High School. Our girls' field hockey team won last night to move on to the championship for the first time ever. I'm proud of them. You know, they've already set a mark that we haven't done. No matter what happens on Saturday, they're doing great things, but of course, we'd love to. So Saturday, Dover High, 11:30, if you're able to come, and please wear red. That's a
goal. And what would our section say?
Yeah.
We're going to decide now.
Okay. First note is just our Smyrna High School family is growing. Our student population is up to 1,736. That is higher than we were at the September 30th count. That was as of November 8th, so who knows? Maybe a few more slipped in there since I checked. But the good news is we have been able, with all of your support, to add 5 new teachers into one into each of our core areas, as well as a new teacher in our education pathway. Again, that is just for the growth of the students and wanting to serve them the best that we can. We've also been able to add a nurse to our school nursing staff, so we now have three, and a school counselor to our school counseling staff, focusing on the importance of supporting the whole child, not just in the classroom. So we're really excited to be able to do that. We have successfully implemented a full first marking period of our new grading scale, used ABCDF. And one of the most positive things that I can say about it is definitely having everyone involved, parents, students, teachers, focus on what is required for learning at each letter grade. Really good conversations about what does it mean that I've got an A, what does it mean that I've got a C, what do I need to do to go from a C to a B. So it's really forcing those conversations, and that's a really positive. The other thing our students are really appreciative of in that new policy is the opportunities for them to improve their grades by being able to submit work past the due date, and then also to be able to do corrections on some of the bigger things. They are definitely taking advantage of that. They're asking questions about that to the teachers, and we're seeing the impact on their grades. So all of that has gone very well. Our next step that we feel is important is we're going to work with the Fulton Curriculum Office to do work on really focusing on developing rubrics to use to communicate to our students and their parents what it looks like at each grade level, particularly on those bigger products. So ahead of time, for a student that does an assignment, they know what they need to do to accomplish each grade. So that's the next step there. Also happy to say that we have successfully rolled out our one-to-one Chromebooks with our students. With the help of many, many hands, that being our office staff, our library staff, our administrative team, and of course the technology team, we could not have done it without them, of course. We currently have 1,680 devices signed out to Smyrna High School students. I'm really happy to say that when you walk around the school, when you look in classrooms, you see them actively using the devices. We've had very few issues with are they charged or not, very few issues with being lost or being broken. Like the students are really taking seriously what we have in their hands. So it's really nice to see that working so nicely already, just one marking period into the school year. The other advantage that we have seen to that is that it has increased the availability for our students when they missed class for whatever reason, COVID absence, family trip, whatever the case may be, right away they can use that device to go into Google Classroom, access the things that they missed, and get their work caught up in a much more timely manner than they were able to before. So that was a real nice perk that I don't really thought about ahead of time, but because teachers are using Google Classroom still, they're able to do that successfully. Focusing next on our special education students, we have been able to double the number of staff who are involved in working with the caseloads of students this year. In the past, we would have a single teacher assigned to manage a caseload of students of the year to be able to work with them on their IEPs, helping them achieve their goals, focusing on their academics, their behavior, their attendance. And what we've done this year is we've been able to double that. Now, for every caseload, we have two teachers assigned working with them, and they are meeting with those students weekly to be able to check in on all those things I just named. So we've doubled the number of people involved, and we've had a consistent time every week that they can have that time to build this connection. And we've seen a really positive. We are having weekly team huddle meetings every Wednesday, so we had one today. And these team huddles are groups of students that are randomly assigned, anywhere from 10 to about 20 students in each huddle. They meet for about 25 minutes every Wednesday, and they're talking about topics that are focused on their social and emotional learning. This is not academic time. This is time when the teacher is running what we hope to be a community circle kind of setup. Now, sometimes, depending on the setup of the room, it may not be a circle, but it's some kind of shape. But the point is, it's not a teacher-led lesson. It is a community discussion. And some of the topics, so we provide the resources to them, and then the teachers facilitate the topic in the huddle. But some of the topics we've covered so far are respect, responsibility, community, empathy, compassion, facing challenges, and celebrating small successes. So we'll continue to add to that every Wednesday, put those lessons out for them. And the goal is that every year this group, this huddle, will remain consistent. So if you are a freshman this year, the group you're with will be the same group. You know, the seniors will graduate out, but roughly the same group every year to, again, try to build those connections so that every student has that one small group of students and that teacher that they're connecting with every single week about something that is not. Now I'm going to transition first to the PowerPoint. Do my best to make this work quickly. What I wanted to focus on, again, it's hard to know what to target when there's so much going on. So it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk about our CTE pathways. So I want to take some time tonight. I don't know if you were able to get it yet, but I did share the link to this presentation so that you can have that. I'm not going to hit every detail on it tonight, and I'm not going to get to every slide. But I wanted you to have it in your hands in case you want to go back and look at it.
I did look at it earlier today.
Okay, awesome. So one of the things I want to
actually love that picture. Yeah. I love that.
Mr. J. Davis helped to put this together. So full credit for any of the pictures you see. So one of the first things I wanted to focus on is we're now up to 16 CTE pathways in the high school. So we're really proud to share that with you. Over 80% of the students are involved in those pathways. And of course, the focus of these is on college and workplace readiness in all of the pathways. Again, I only picked a few, so I'm going to start with our STEM pathway. So we have three teachers involved in that, and we can take a look at what's on level one. So in level one, they're working on CAD. They are focusing on having a design process, learning how to draw those drawings, very detailed, focusing on measurements by hand first, and then incorporating all those lovely math skills. And then they work take that and put it into the CAD program. To see that translation from paper into the CAD program setting. They've got the technology to be able to do that, which is wonderful. In those CAD drawings, they're testing hypotheses, they're looking at statistics, physics, geometry, and then of course they're doing this in groups. So one of the beautiful things is when you walk around the classroom, you see them communicating and collaborating with each other as they use this technology. In level two, that's where we look at robotics. So they're using a program called robotics software. And what they're doing is manipulating different inputs to see the effect on the output that's happening with the different VEX equipment that they have. And they work through small projects throughout the year doing those variations and what they're putting in. But one of the neat projects they do at the end of the year is they have to design and build using the VEX equipment. Here's an example of one here. And what their goal is to separate recyclable materials. So the little robots that they build are actually supposed to separate recyclables if everything works out correctly. That's a pretty cool project that they're doing there. And then when we look at level three, this is our environmental sustainability course with Mr. Semenek. And one of the neat projects that they are doing is looking at solar panels, looking at the variety of things involved in purchasing solar panels, how to position them, how to get the best energy output out of them. And again, one of their culminating activities is to actually try to design a solar panel system for Smart High School. So when we have that ready to go, Mr. Holt, we will let you know so that we can get that in place. Okay, and the next slide, I want to move on to the next pathway, and this is our digital communications technology pathway with Dr. Fregale. You'll see on the next slide that he has listed several different projects, but in particular, I wanted to highlight that this year, this group is producing the news twice a week, and they're putting it on YouTube so that we can put it out to the public. We were forced into this thinking because of COVID, so good things came from COVID sometimes, right? And last year, we didn't have an audience. It used to be they would do the news live from the news studio, the students would listen to it in the mornings. That was the first thing we did. But last year, we found ourselves without an audience to perform for. So they started thinking about doing it other ways. And we decided to carry that on into this year for a number of different reasons. One being that sometimes at 7:30 in the morning, not everybody's ready to listen to the news. Sometimes they're not all in the building at 7:30. And in this important announcement. So this way we can publish the link out on our social media. We're doing it twice a week. And then the parents, the students, the community members can listen to the news really at whatever time best suits their schedule. So that's been a really neat project for these students. The next pathway I want to highlight is our K-12 Teacher Academy. And you'll see on the next slide, the main reason I wanted to focus on this is if you look at that list of items that they're focusing on, this is exactly what we're asking our teachers to do right now in the classroom. So the exciting thing for us is that we're preparing that next generation of teachers that we so desperately need to fill the positions that we want to fill. And we want to try to keep them right here in Smyrna if possible. And they're being prepared so well for these lessons. They're doing SEL activities, just like we're doing in our huddles. They're looking at discipline plans and what it takes to manage a classroom, how to have an effective lesson. They're doing all of that, and then they're also preparing to do competitions where they show all of them. So that's really exciting as well. The next pathway that I want to highlight is our computer science pathway, this all work. There's been a lot of growth in this pathway since we had last chance to talk about CTE. We have an entry-level pathway called Exploring Computer Science. And one of the neat projects that they're working, I tried to capture here in this picture, is the students come up with a list of courses that they want to take at Smart High School, but they have to create the HTML code to produce that list. So the students are creating this, which means nothing to me, full description, but then it comes out looking like this. And so it's something that's important to them. Hey, what classes do I want to take? But then they're learning how to create that code in their classroom. Another neat thing that they're doing, and this is still the entry level, is looking at digital citizenship and cyber hygiene. All topics, if you look at that list, that are pertinent to their lives right now. Analyzing their own digital footprint, testing passwords, looking at privacy policies, cyberbullying, what does that look like? How do you recognize it? How do you report it? How do you know you're a victim of it? All topics that the class is covering that are very important really for all of our students. And then this is where we move into the AP. So in this pathway, after the exploring course, there are two different AP courses that you can take. This is a project that the computer science principles AP course is working on. And the students were learning how to create their own functions, and they just are working on designing a decision maker app. And this one I thought was really interesting that one student created. I don't know if you can see it that far, but it calculates for you what time you should go to bed that night, based on the priorities of your next day. So you're gonna fill in information about what your day's like, and it says, hey, you should be in bed at this time. But again, the student created the idea, created the coding to come up with that. So that's one of the projects that they're working on. The next pathway is our Academy of Finance. Again, growing tremendously. We are up to all three levels in the Academy of Finance pathway, and highlighting a project from each of those levels in Academy of Finance 1. They are looking at different investment instruments where the students wrote blog posts to explain things like annuities, blue chip stocks, junk bonds, and so much more. And the second level, they're using the Monopoly game. You see a picture down there of them actually playing the game in class to apply the accounting cycle to a real world business setting. So what they did is they set up a real estate business. They had to record all their transactions throughout the game on paper, buying, selling properties, paying rent, things like that. And then once through the first couple of weeks when they had done it all on paper, they're now transitioning that to online programs that they would use for the same purpose. They're getting to see both ways to record that information as they work through the Monopoly cycle. And then in the third level, one of the projects they're working on in diversity in business is they're creating skits in small groups and performing for the class in what they're calling public service announcements to try to educate each other about the different kinds of financial industries outside of banking. So they might be doing payday lenders, pawn shops, prepaid gift cards, et cetera, but preparing short skits and then presenting them to the class to educate the classmates. In our marketing pathway, you may have seen some of those students at a football game, but selling the gear that they've designed to show off our Smyrna gear. But one of the projects I wanted to highlight for them is their involvement in junior achievement. This was new once Ms. Camaranzi came into the pathway, and it's been a great partnership for them. In particular, they're involved right now in the Delaware sales pitch competition, where teams of 3 to 5 students are working together to create a pitch that has to be about 4 minutes in length. They record it and submit it, and it's from the idea of what product do I want to create, what's it going to cost to get it off the ground, how do I market it, just the whole process is part of what they have to present. This is one in particular that I chose to include in this presentation called the Greener Grasp. And so this is a quote from the students creating this. The majority of coffee shops serve beverages in a single-use cup or sleeve that are paper or plastic, which is not environmentally conscious. Yet it still does not keep the heat from penetrating through the sleeve. Our neoprene sleeve is much better to keep your hands from burning. Customers will like that they are being environmentally conscious as well as having a product that is reusable. And again, they do all the steps of how they can market that product. So they are actively working on that right now.
Where can I buy one?
Yeah. I'll have to ask them. Once you're
yeah.
Moving on to food, the culinary pathway. So we are to the point now where we have two levels, and next year we're at our third level of culinary. In level 1, Their main focus is on the history of food service and how it's developed, the people that have had an impact on that development, and safety. That second item there is all the different topics involved in food safety, handling themselves in a safe manner in the kitchen, and they begin to look at different skills with a knife. They learn different kinds of knives and how to do 11 different cuts. I didn't know there were that many, but there's 11 different cuts that they're learning how to do and have to show proficiency in. And then when they move on to level two, they continue to work on that, and then they really get involved in more of the actual food handling. So some of the things they're looking at there are soup, stock, sauces, different flavorings and seasonings, and then they also start to look at the financial. I cost out a recipe, I think about portion control and those sorts of things. And then next year we will add level three, so we're excited for that as well. When we add, we're able to add, with your support, and I thank you for that, a CTE specialist to Smyrna High School. This was really important because prior to this, each teacher was trying to manage the seniors that we were placing out into workplaces. And that was a really difficult thing for them to be able to do and then do all the things involved with being a CTE teacher as well. So Mr. Davis has taken that on. Go to the next slide. And he's still working on that, very successfully making connections in the community and being able to monitor those placements with the students and making sure that they're fulfilling their requirements, that the employers are happy with what our students are doing for them. But that's one of the key things in his role. And then the other thing I wanted to highlight about halfway down on that slide, and we can go to the next one, Bruce, is that he's created a group of student leaders. So there's one student from every pathway, what he calls his interact ambassadors. And they serve as a leadership team, not only for CTE at Smyrna High School, but really for the entire school. If you think back to how many students I said are involved in this program, this group of student leaders is having a significant impact on what's happening at Smyrna High. So they meet regularly, they share what each of their pathways is doing so they can see how they can maybe coordinate together on different projects. And they're also working closely with our SGA so that we can see how this group and what it's able to do can help support other activities. And then what I wanted to finish with is just to highlight some awards that we won from our Ag Science faculty. So that we were able to, despite lots of odds, still send a team to Indianapolis this year to compete at the national level. So we're really happy about that. The agronomy CDE team placed silver at the national level. The parliamentary procedure team placed bronze. Poultry CDE team placed bronze also. Our state level winner, Reagan McCrelly, went and competed individually and placed silver nationally. And then that last item, one of the nice things about FFA is our kids can keep winning awards even after they graduate. And so we had a whole group of students from the class of 2018 who were recognized and won their American FFA degrees. And that was George Class Peters, Trey Thompson, Ryan Wheatley, Aaron Smallwood, now Carmen, she's married, and again, all from the class of 2018. So even our graduates are going on. So I apologize for the length, but again, it's a lot of stuff. A lot of good things happening. And I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have about it. Thank you.
I don't have any questions, but just a comment. You know, I have a freshman at the high school, and the transition after the last 18 months, he is ready to go to school every morning, tired but excited and wanting to go to school. And that's a great feeling as a parent, but then also to just to the environment that you're creating at the high school, the teachers, they're involved, just everything. And I just want to say thank you. I know it has not been easy, but definitely, much better situation than last year, virtual and then hybrid and all of the changes that it has been. A little comforting knowing that they're in school all day, 5 days a week. And just want to thank you for your efforts, the entire team as well. But, when a 15-year-old boy is excited to go to school and go to accounting class, and, it just is really, really encouraging. And I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Cook. Okay, now we'll start with the superintendent.
Thank you. Madam President, what Mrs. Cook has shared and, of course, the accomplishments of the other seven schools combined demonstrate why this is American Education Week. So a special thank you to everyone who works with our students, works in our schools, coordinates activities through the community and brings them into the schools. As everyone has pointed out, this is a wonderful year for students and staff alike to be back in the classrooms, and we celebrate American Education Week all of this week. So thank you to everyone involved, especially our students who persevere. Wanted to announce that given all of the circumstances and then the continued extensions of the health-related regulations, the traditional I Love Smyrna School District Day 2022 reserved for February indoors, at which we typically expect anywhere 5,000 to 6,000 participants. Unfortunately, we're going to have to cancel that event, but we are looking forward to doing something on a smaller scale, but doing something in the spring wrapped around our weekend week, which is mid-November, outdoors, if possible. If not, we will continue planning for something outdoors, even if we have to punt it until next year. We know that the traditional I Love Smyrna School District Day is a signature event for the district. We just recognize that given all of the circumstances surrounding COVID, the continued process of providing vaccinations and wearing masks, it would be foolish of us to house an indoor event at which 6,000 people might enter. So we're going to monitor how we progress this year and look for different ways, maybe on a smaller scale, to celebrate, particularly outdoors when the weather turns warmer. Something similar to what we did this past fall, last month, with our district-wide fall festival. We have concert season coming up. Just giving the board an overview. At the secondary level, our middle and high school choir and band are looking to conduct more of a traditional concert. At the elementary level, we're looking at a smaller scale event, even virtual events. The rationale, again, is given the circumstances of the COVID pandemic and the availability of the vaccine to families for older students gives them an extra layer of protection. So we're hopeful that in the spring, we will resume a typical normal, whatever that looks like now, a normal concert theatric performance schedule for all of the students, K to 12. So the elementary teachers are working with their administrative leaders to create some type of celebration for winter at the younger age, and middle and high school would conduct a more traditional event with their students. And finally, I'm certain Mr. Holt will mention it, but we have we've signed a contract with Qualtrics, as we've talked about in the past. Qualtrics is a vendor that serves the University of Delaware. We have contracted with them to serve the Smyrna School District. None of the data from the University of Delaware are available to us, and none of our data are available to the University of Delaware, simply that we both use the same software platform. For staff, volunteers, and those contracted individuals who provide services to the district on a recurring basis, working directly with children, to upload either their vaccination status or their weekly testing status. And so far, we've been very pleased with the results, and we're still gathering data. But everything is confidential, secure. It's an individual platform, and each individual has an opportunity to upload their data in a single-use, secure access portal. And so more to come about that as we go. But as we know, that requirement will be in place for 180 days, which takes us through May 1st. And we'll see where we are in the spring. But once again, celebrating everything that folks are doing with and for our students and the support of our families. Happy American Education Week, and thank you, Terry.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Ms. Judy?
Hey. All right, broken record. Thank you, nurses. And say it, everyone. Thank you. Thank you, Susan, my right hand. So Dr. Wilson had mentioned getting some, just a number of cases that we've had, you know, month to month. I didn't get a chance to go back, but I can tell you from last meeting to today, we've had 114 cases, and that's positivity, not quarantining because of exposure. So there is still a considerable amount of education being disrupted by the virus. So that's where we are from October 20th to November 17th. We had a flu clinic, a flu shot clinic. We partnered with Atlantic Apothecary and Kevin Mustow. We did that the end of October, and we have another set of clinics this Friday. So he went to half of the schools about a month ago, and he's going to the other half on the 19th. Our team over at finance and payroll have been improving the COVID-Z forms that we distributed after the last meeting. And our two new nurses have started with us already. So that's a great thing. We are continuing to talk, have discussions around testing. I can tell you that we have a very high vaccination rate. It's much higher than I thought, but I'm gonna brag for a minute, gone through 1,166 emails to confirm vaccinations and testing. So those all went through my email box. So if I didn't email you back, there's a reason. So today we hit 1,166, and those are Qualtrics emails coming through for verifications of testing and vaccine. So the vaccinated individuals just load their cards, and then they go to need to test people, they submit those, and then they get approval. We are going to hold a vaccination clinic for our students from 5 to 18. That would be coordinated with Atlantic Apothecary and Kevin Mustow. He works with public health, and he would contacted us to ask us if we were available or if we wanted to make that available. So we said, yes, that is great. We had contacted Amy Burnett. She said, I don't think we have enough staff to do that. Not her clinic, but Bay Health in general. So we said, no problem. We just want to check with you first because we partner with you. But Kevin is able to do that, and I'm sure Amy will be right there helping alongside.
Is there any questions about booster shots?
We have not had any questions about booster shots. We are requiring a booster shot. Some of our people have gotten them, but I think the CDC just approved for anyone 18 and older to get a booster shot, maybe just yesterday. So there's no requirement in the regs that mandate anything, so we're just moving forward.
Right. Maybe I'll make that, you know, ask Kevin if he can do that as an option as well.
Yep. Sure, I can do that. So, you know, just listening to the news, I certainly am a glass half full kind of person, but I do want people to be aware of the holiday season and the potential for surges of infection over that period of time. We hope everybody comes back healthy and ready to get back to work, but we are aware that, you know, you're with your family and your protection of yourself is down. You're excited to be together again. And so just be aware and be cognizant of that. And I think that is all my COVID list of things. September 30th count was confirmed by Department of Education. And we also completed a very, very long audit that started during the March of 2020 with COVID on criminal background checks. And that was, like I said, quite long and extensive. And talking to the other human resources individuals in the state, all of the letters were pretty much formulary, all of the same. So there's some things that they want the human resources associated with districts to be differently. So we're going to work on that as a group to kind of get that to be uniform across the board. We're still hiring. We've got lots of positions out there. We've got some coaches out there. We've got some elementary ed, we have some paras, we have some CMP 4-hour workers, we've got a part-time courier, we've got a chief courier. If we approve that, did we approve that yet? No. and subs, always subs. So if you want to work, we'll find a place for you to work. We also had a discussion with the union multiple times now during these about covering classes. And I did, you know, a research little project on talk to all the schools about what does that look like in your school. And I've discovered, unfortunately, that it's primarily in Stacy's school because she's got such a big school. And, you know, you have maternity leaves and illnesses and sick kids and all kinds of stuff. So what I did was put together this matrix of class coverage, how the schools are covering that. And you can see that Stacy's list is, you know, is just as long, if not longer, than the others because she gets very creative about how she can cover classes. So we appreciate that. One of the things we offer to the union and hope that they made others aware was that we would like to offer that if you're covering a period of time that is, you know, not, if is your planning period and you voluntarily do that, that that time be returned to you either at the end of the day leaving with kids or during an in-service time when you're able to go without missing something or at the end of the year when you don't have any in-service trainings to do it. So that's something that you can work out at the building level, but we do want to return that time to everyone and make sure that they understand how appreciated they are for doing those types of things. That is all I have.
Thank you. Principal
Holt. Okay, buildings and grounds. Just like we start out every month talking about making sure that all of the schools have the necessary PPE for students. We are continuing to see an increase in demand for masks for students as well as adults. We are starting to see some disruptions in the supply chain for those, and prices are starting to go up for those products. We are still going through our enhanced preventive maintenance, as we always do with the HVAC systems. As we talked about last time, the refinishing of the Smyrna Elementary stage has started and should be wrapping up very shortly if it hasn't already wrapped up today. We had two interesting incidents that occurred where we had students are not present, single vehicle accidents at the middle school a couple months ago where one of our utility poles was damaged. So we're in the process of getting that replaced. And the fence at Clayton Elementary School was also damaged by a single vehicle accident. So that fence had gotten very close to the end of its life expectancy. So we were actually planning on replacing that. So this is kind of the little push we needed to move that forward. We have an electrical contractor that's going to be on site next week to install electric in the multi-purpose room at the middle school. We're adding an additional serving line in the multi-purpose room at the middle school because we're now using that space as a cafeteria. And we're also going to be using that as a new serving line. Also, we're going to be wrapping up, hopefully, if all of the parts are in, our culinary arts electrical equipment installation will occur, and all the wiring should occur as well. We have a flooring contractor that's supposed to be at North Elementary to wrap up one of the floor replacements next week as well. Technology, the one-to-one deployment of devices to the schools is complete. We're continuing to work with the state partners to implement GoGuardian, which is that monitoring software that we're going to have for all of our devices. As Mr. Williams and Mrs. Judy mentioned a few minutes ago about Qualtrics, technology is working very closely with the administrative team to make sure that rolls out successfully and that any issues that staff have with complying with Qualtrics and uploading information, that we support them. And we're also, technology also working with the finance department for the emergency connectivity fund grant compliance. Transportation, we're hiring there for sure. We need bus drivers. We're continuing to work collaboratively with those contractors to make sure that we get students to and from school as safely as possible. Also, having to double up on grounds sometimes when necessary. Administrators are being extremely helpful, and parents are being extremely understanding with all the compromises that we have to that. We have completed the first phase of training to transition from the existing software to the VEO software. And also, I know Mr. Robinson and Mrs. Almondo are working to support some recruitment efforts like we talked about in meetings past. We do have some drivers in the pipeline, so we're excited about that. It does take some time to get folks from a traditional driving or a CDL to having students on the bus. So we're working through those things. Child nutrition, very active in the month of October, served just over 130,000 meals. They're continuing, just like everyone else, to have staffing issues. And we're starting to see an increase in food supply chain disruptions, as well as seeing an increase in cost of food, having significant delays in equipment parts, equipment itself. We're starting to see some significant issues and delays there. We are very grateful that the USDA did implement the waivers for this year and we're being able to offer breakfast and lunch free to our students. And we're also very thankful that for our vendors, truck drivers, and CMP staff who are adjusting and pivoting every single day to make sure that we get what we need to serve our students. School climate and safety, they're wrapping up the SETED assessments this week. Hopefully all 8 of our schools will have their assessments completed. We have confirmed our panic cell phone application and we have the purchase process being completed for the school guard 911, and that'll be implemented as soon as possible. Also working on the SEL calendar events. Our safety specialists are completing intruder alert drills, fire drills, and have in-person ALICE training. Planned for all 8 buildings by our next in-service day, January 22. The Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging Committee is up and running. The next meeting is scheduled for November 30th and December 14th. And they're currently creating subcommittee groups to start tackling some of the important topics that has been brought to the table by the committee members. Also planning for training to implement the newly created crisis response plan with staff being addressed with psychological first aid and students being addressed with prepared. That's all I have for operations.
Thank you. Curriculum?
We had a parent advisory committee, parents from all schools in the district on October 27th. We discussed Title I, parent involvement and interims, which were pertinent at the time. My team, along with building administration, has done walkthroughs in all buildings. We are using this data to be able to share strategies, give guidance for our coaching teams, and gather data for our grants. As Mrs. Cook said, our secondary grading committee is still working. They're reflecting on practices. We met this week, and we came up with a couple of areas that we need to dig a little deeper in and get some more information. So they will be meeting again in January. And our elementary standards-based committee is scheduled to meet in December to do similar work, reflect after the first trimester report card goes out, and look into all of the areas that have changed. In December, we have our next in-service day. We have some responsive classroom training for all of our elementary paraprofessionals and our specialist teachers. We have some first aid and CPR training scheduled, and algebra and geometry is on the calendar. As part of our wraparound program, we are working with building administrations and the school coaches to look at the students in the program and look at their academic needs and providing support to them while they are in their wraparound program. We're also working with building administration as they completed their first round of MTSS meetings to look at students who need extra support in academic areas.
Thank you. Special service, Dr. Reno.
So I am going to piggyback a little bit off of some of the high school, because we are very excited about the changes that have occurred this year with the special education programming and support at the high school. So there's so Stacy mentioned a lot of the new initiatives that she's brought about. And we can already see the impact, the positive impact this is having, including the CTE. And one of our biggest focuses at the high school is preparing our students who have all these supports from an IEP. How do we prepare them for the next step? How do we make sure they're ready? And we talk all the time about these transition plans, but they need to be meaningful. And so we are working really together now and trying to make sure that these transition plans are meaningful and match up with these pathways that they're going through, and that we can see the skills that are gaining from them and that the skills they still need. So, so we're really excited about all the work that is happening there. So thank you for all of that. The winter harvest is coming. This is the big celebration. Well, first we have Thanksgiving. Our department does help in the collaboration this weekend with not one but two Thanksgiving dinners that's going to occur for the community. So some of my staff members will be there. The bookmobile will be showing up to support these events as well. And then we will move into the winter harvest. And the winter harvest celebration is so important to us because for families that may not have that opportunity to enjoy all the festivities, have all these celebrations, we make sure that they can come together and enjoy it with us. Again, with the concern about being all inside, it won't quite be the same, but Mrs. Cook has offered to allow us to use the front area, the bus lanes, and we're going to set up tables and with tents. It'll be a winter wonderland because it'll be on December 18th, hoping that the weather will cooperate, not be too cold. And so the students and their families will still have the opportunity to, tell their wishes to Santa Claus and listen to music and have pickup craft projects to take away and all that. So we're very excited about that event. As every month, as you know, we have a special ed teachers council. And again, highlighting something that is going on in high school, one of the things that was brought to our attention, they were really excited about, is that they are meeting as a team, a special services team, but at the high school level, to talk about all sorts of things that are going on with students in particular, or programming, and together as a team problem solving to make sure that things are working well in the area of special education. And we encourage all of our different schools to have these smaller teams at their building level to make sure the specialists can get together, talk about students, talk about what's working right. And so we were happy to hear that that is happening now. So we also started, Jennifer Morris started the Special Education Parent Council. I think, again, a positive of COVID, we've started the Zoom. And because of that, it makes it really easy for people to participate. And so it was nice to be able to have it on Zoom and have families. And she even has some volunteers, some parents who are ready to take up the gauntlet and continue with having these meetings that are similar to PTO type meetings, but with the focus of special education. And the last one here is I wanted to talk about MTSS, multi-tiered systems of support. As you know, July 1st, the regulation came out that all schools in Delaware should be using this
not just in the area of reading and math, which was focused on for RTI, but also in social emotional learning, oral expression, and listening comprehension. And so special services has been collaborating with curriculum and collaborating with school climate to make sure that we are looking at all the general tier one supports and then the types of interventions needed to address our students at different levels. And that's it for special services.
Thank you. Monia, yeah. Do you have anything to say now? Or?
I do.
Actually do.
Just a few items to go over quickly. There's a couple of items bulleted in the agenda support, but before I start on those, I want to mention on finance and facilities behalf that we did receive a letter from the Department of Education just this afternoon approving the construction documents that were submitted that the board voted on at the October and September meeting for the North Smyrna Elementary renovation project. So I think it was probably around 4:30 or 4 to 5 tonight. We did receive those. No questions, and we should be all good moving forward with the documents in front of the submit. For the items that we had on the report for the board, Deb has already mentioned the September 30th unit count, but I also wanted to mention that here at Smyrna, we had a slight enrollment growth this year. So in the actual numbers, we were up just over 2%. In units, we were up just over 2.5%. And that compares statewide to a 1.34% enrollment growth. So we grew more than the average. 15 regular school districts grew, 4 declined, and charters were half. I think there's 24 charters this year and half declined in enrollment and half increased in enrollment. So in terms of our growth, we're not at the target that we thought we would be 2 years ago, but we certainly recovered in that growth projection from last year's COVID single student enrollment growth. So our projection is back up where we grew. Right. So this year, district-wide on September 30th, we were 6,034 students. That was up from 5,883. And as we know, it was 5,882 the year before. So again, the projection is going where we thought it would pre-COVID, and hopefully we'll catch up a little bit to support those numbers.
Not too fast, though.
Well, not too fast, but we're getting the project started, right?
We're over 6,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so that was good news for us because on those districts that did not grow, some of them did not meet their 98% target, and they were down several units, 10 to 20 units in some districts. So we grew, not only did we grow, but we hit our 98% target number, which was great. It helps with planning, both from a staffing and a budget perspective. So the additional funding from DOE has started to come in. Most of you may know that they preload about 75% of our budget and the remaining 25% started moving this week. So we're happy to hear that or to see that. As we move into the FY23 preparation stage, I wanted to mention that the Department of Education's hearing is scheduled for November 19th, which is Friday, from 1:45 to 2:45. That hearing is available online and in a WebEx format. The physical presentation, the slides themselves, are already available on the OMB website. So if you have an interest or any questions, if you review that, please just let me know. We'll see what we can do to get those answered. But a couple of areas that I thought would be important to highlight is that the department is pursuing increases for public school transportation, the formula. Several years ago, there was a 4-year phase-in to address some of the concerns in the public or the school transportation community. And additional funding for mental health services will be requested. And the Division II reduction that was taken a few years ago, statewide, about $26 million. The Department of Education is asking for at least a $6 million restoration of that. So in the current school year for us, that's $1.1 million out of 26. So we would get some relief there as well. And just to quickly mention, the capital budget is significant this year. The department is supporting 149 in projects statewide. They are including a market pressure contingency, and those projects have not yet been determined. If we find between now and February or March that some of the projects that we will be issuing RFP for come in significantly higher than the funding, we'll come back to the board and indicate that to you as well. Look to the department for support. And the final item that I had on the list was just to mention that the FY21 local audit that is happening statewide, the local audits that are happening statewide, the districts have begun their entrance conferences with the contracted CPA firm. We believe that those audits will occur alphabetically for the most part, so we don't anticipate being in the group until the end. But APO and some of the other earlier districts have already had their entrance conferences. So I just want to make you aware of that.
And those are just the standard local audits, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay. I guess we'll go right into our regular board meeting. And we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance led by Ms. Miller.
Allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Have any changes to the agenda?
Seeing none.
That takes us down to our student board member report.
Hi, everyone. I am late. I was actually
in
high school.
We had an early meeting, you were late.
So some of the stuff kind of had this cool question. I feel like all of the night was about the high school.
We made a decision. It's red Saturday.
Yes.
We can close the meeting.
So I missed the last meeting because it's float season, and my last float, I had to float over before my vacation meeting. I'll backtrack and say that float and all of the homecoming festivities took place, and they were a huge success. It was great feedback from my class, and I know that the underclassmen definitely enjoyed it and enjoyed finally getting to see what it looks like to be a normal high school student. We also had the club fair that was hosted, so we had a lot of students during lunch. After they ate, they had the choice to go into the hallway that connects the lunchroom to one of our exits. They had the opportunity to walk through that hallway and see the different clubs that are offered at our school and sign up or get in contact, make suggestions for the clubs. And so we had a lot of success with that. I was there on behalf of the Black Student Union, so I got to talk to a lot of students and meet new students as well. With that being said, the Black Student Union is having a meeting tomorrow. We'll be creating holiday cards for children in the community, younger children in the community. And then report cards, like Ms. Coach just said, have been released today, actually. Staff email was before I came here. Winter sports have started trials this week. I've heard a lot of students have started trying out. I think that with fall sports, students were hesitant because they hadn't been in school, they had seen what sports are going to look like, they didn't have coaches, but now it seems like there's a lot more involvement, a lot more students trying out. The football team is ranked first seed. So I go to every football game, I run into the section, but I don't know what any of
what that means.
So they'll be going to the second round of playoffs next Friday at home. Student section still coming up for a theme for that one. Let me know. And then, like Ms. Cook said, the field hockey team has made it to the championship, and they'll be playing at Dover at 11:30 on Saturday, and that's a readout. Then, finally, the Unified flag football team also made it to the playoffs, and further information will be coming on the date and times of that game. It'll be released later. We're actually, I'm on the Unified football team. We're actually undefeated, so we're just as good as the regular. But that's all I have for today. I will add that huddle is going great at the high school. I think that it's an amazing step in the right direction for our district. And I'm just enjoying the school year so much. I don't want to leave high school.
We don't want you to leave. Stay. Yeah.
We have a couple job openings. I think the unified bracket is going to come out on the 22nd.
Okay.
So I heard that. So
I have to let you know if you're the number ones.
Yeah, sure, whatever that.
Love it. Thank you.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion for approval of our board minutes from October 20th.
We need to
formal public comments.
Bruce, is there anyone
I'm
for
skipping it.
Public comment?
Jess, can you check?
Can you check that?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, now we can go to number 8. I'll bring it closer so I can see. Approval of our board minutes from the October 20th, 2021.
Madam President, I move that we accept the board minutes as submitted.
Have a motion by Ms. Malik, second by Dr. Wilson, to approve the board minutes as submitted. Any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye. Abstain.
Motion carries. School choice 2021-2022 school year.
Thank you, Madam President. We have 12 school choice applications for inter-district transfer and 11 choice applications for intra-district transfer, 5 inter-district choice termination forms, and 2 intra-district school choice termination forms. 0 denied forms for this evening, and these are all for the 2021-2022 school year. The recommendation of the administration that the inter-district students 1 through 12, the intra-district students 1 through 11, the inter-district school choice terminations 1 through 5, and the intra-district school school choice terminations 1 and 2 be admitted under choice C.
Madam President, I move that we accept the school choice for the 2021-2022 school year as submitted.
Second. We have a motion by Ms. Malik, second by Ms. Lloyd, to approve school choice for the 2021-22 school year as submitted. Are there any questions or comments? Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Hearing none, motion carried. We'll go back to 8.2, approval of monthly financial reports.
Oh, darn. Let's get that.
Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Included in your packet today, again, would be the child nutrition monthly reporting that shows month over month, both compared to this time last year. The October student funds report is included in the packet. And the general October monthly reports from the district-wide perspective. I think the most important thing to highlight here is that September, October, and November are each months where we receive a significant amount of the property tax revenue. And as we look year over year and compare to where we have been in prior years and where we had hoped to be from a budget perspective, we are right on track. Around 91% of the cumulative property tax revenue we expect to receive by the end of October, and we have in fact received 91%. We received an additional payment early in November from the state for the senior property tax refund. So we'll see a slight bump in our November reporting. It was not received in the month of October. So you'll see that bump in November will be a little bit higher than a normal November. Does anyone have any questions regarding the information that's included in their packet?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion.
Madam President, I make a motion to approve item 8.2, the monthly financial report as submitted by the administration.
Second. I have a motion by Ms. Lloyd, second by Dr. Wilson, to approve the monthly financial reports as submitted. Are there any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed have the same right? Hearing none, motion carried. Now that takes us to 8.4, school choice options.
Okay, so we do this every year. If you look at a projected enrollment of the schools, we actually had a slight decline in some of our schools, but a major increase in the other schools. So we're looking at a percentage capacity of 85% or less. And the schools that are 85% or less are Smyrna Elementary and Clayton Intermediate. So we would look to have those schools be open and then North for the immersion program. Now that being said, just so the public understands, once you're our student, you're our student. If you're moving from one school to the other, you're keeping your grades up, you are not, you're behaving yourselves and you're attending regularly, then you will continue on. Because I do get that question frequently, especially at the school choice night. Well, the next school that I'm transitioning to is closed. No, that's not the case. When you're ours, we'll take care of you and we'll figure it out. So that being said, many of the schools who are considered closed, if that's how you vote, are not actually. They are open to the students that are matriculating up through the grade levels.
Closed community choice.
Still closed community choice.
Yes. Madam President, I make a motion to approve item 8.4, the school choice operations for the 22-23 school year as submitted by the administration.
Second.
I have a motion by Ms. Lloyd, second by Ms. Malik, to approve 8.4 school choice option for 2022-2023 school year as submitted. Any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Hearing none, motion carried. 8.5, vacations, board policy 4147, first reading revision.
So, Madam President, as we know, Juneteenth has been declared a holiday, so we are simply updating our board policy 4147 to reflect that fact.
Madam President, I'd like to make a motion to approve the vacation board policy first reading and revision.
Second.
I have a motion by Dr. Wilson, second by Ms. Lloyd, to approve 8.5 vacation board policy 4147, first reading revision. Are there any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Have the same right? Hearing none. Motion carried. 8.6, summer schedule for policy 4148, first reading, revision.
Madam President, in the policy before you, we're simply updating it so it is aligned with current practice. The policy was initially drafted when we started well before Labor Day, and so everything now has been flexed anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks, depending on the placement of Labor Day on the upcoming calendar. So the verbiage has been updated to reflect what our practice is. Needs to be.
Madam President, I entertain a motion to approve the summer schedule board policy 4148, first reading revision, as presented.
Second.
I have a motion by Dr. Wilson, second by Ms. Lloyd, to approve 8.6 summer schedule board policy 4148, first reading revision. Any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Hearing none, motion carried. That takes us down to 9, personnel.
Madam President, I move that we approve 9.1 to 9.10 for personnel as presented.
Second.
I have a motion by Dr. Wilson, second by Ms. Malik, to approve 9.1 through 9.10 under personnel. Any questions or comments? Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. So we have no personnel matters, no student matters. So we need to go executive session.
Yes.
Okay, so
we return to the executive session.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we'll be adjourning to executive session, and when we come back out, if we don't have anything to vote on. So, good night to everyone. Be safe going home, and have a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Thanks.